This is Rating Descending,
where we watch IMDb's worst 250 movies so you don't have to.
I'm Michelle St. Clair.
I'm Abigail Ward.
And this week we watched Delta Farce. Three bumbling army reservists bound for Iraq are accidentally dropped at Mexican village besieged by hostile forces. Let's watch.
Watch White Lotus.
No, yet. I haven't.
Oh, dude, it's really good. It'll fuck you up, though.
I know it's like beat, like the theme song. Yeah, but then it's isn't it? And then season two, it's like.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. You don't even need to watch it. That's kind of.
I think I get it.
That's it.
I think I get it. I know it's Mike White who made it.
Dude, I can't. White Lotus fucked me up. It really freaked me out. It was an insight into human nature that actually scares me.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's the way that people will lie to one another to take revenge on being lied to. It's creepy.
Mm.
It creeps. That's exactly the kind of stuff that triggers my bullshit.
So for you, it was a horror, but for everyone else, it was messy drama.
Exactly. For me, it's like social horror. What if that's how Claude and me are? I deep spiraled about it.
Yeah.
I went down and down and down and down.
That's really cool.
It was
cool.
Good TV.
That's
it was actually really, cool. really good. It was the kind of TV that made me think about the themes around it for a long time and feel really uneasy about it.
Mm.
It was good. It was uncomfortable. It was an uncomfortable watch for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deeply uncomfortable because it's lies, conspiracies, and thoughts.
Secrets. We sound like Alex Jones.
Secrets.
Lies.
Conspiracies.
Thoughts. Goblins.
Goblins in the soil. Hey, we got an email.
Whoa.
We got an email. Oh, my God. Here it is. Hello, Rating Descenders. Olivia, honored friend of the podcast, Olivia Bernard.
With the best fan artwork ever, ever,
ever. Exactly. Olivia's latest email inspired me to also write in. She was the one who introduced me to the podcast to begin with, and I've stuck with it ever since. I've also gotten to see lots of her art over the years, which, as I'm sure you've seen, is fantastic. I'm not visually skilled enough to do anything in that vein, so instead I'll just reaffirm how much fun I've had with the podcast, which has been a mainstay for me since I got onto it in summer of 2022. That's after I was able to keep doing the advertising, so hell yeah.
You came in at a great time, because that was really when I stopped being like,
isn't that when we came back
coming off drugs?
Wasn't 2022 when we had the hiatus? That's when we were like, we have joy again.
Woo-hoo!
We're in it.
We got through Spookums in April,
we did Spookums in April, and then we completely fucking fell apart as human beings, but then a few months later we were back, and maybe.
Woo-hoo!
And that string really was a great string of apps.
Yeah.
I worked retail doing basically nothing but building tables, so your consistent wit and energy made those months so much more bearable.
Aww.
Spent a solid 5 minutes in the Hungover Games episode cracking up at Abby's visceral reaction, or why did you ever doubt you had autism? Michelle's cackling is infectious. I won't be the person here who just lists out moments they remember from years worth of episodes ago. I mean, you're talking to two people who want to have a podcast. That's exactly what we want.
And also we need the reminders of what shit we talked about a few weeks ago.
Also true. So I'll just go with two you might enjoy. One, I didn't know Raspberry Pi was a computing thing for months, so I assumed Michelle was trying to run her PlayStation through a goddamn pastry and was very impressed. And two, your thoughts on Ra 1 convinced Olivia and I to watch it, and since we obviously loved it, and I was taking a class on Asian cinema at the time, I dearly wanted to analyze it for my final paper.
Aww.
Unfortunately, the professor shut it down. Still salty about that.
Yeah, fuck that professor, man. Don't take it on board.
Fuck that professor.
If anyone tries to tell you to do anything, ever, always say no. Always. That's my advice.
In this podcast, we're anti being told what to do in any way.
We are pro-belligerence.
Yeah, we are pro-belligerence. Or to paraphrase Community, we're pro-anti, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
Well, you're very pro-anti.
I'm for anti, 100%. Yeah. And this year, I will be voting for anti.
Oh, my God.
In the 2024 federal elections.
Wow. You're fucking getting in on the election a year early?
Yeah.
Look at you go. That's how anti you are.
Yeah.
You're anti the date of the election.
I fucking am. I'm anti the election. I'm not excited for it.
No, well, no one is. There's a very specific kind of person that is, and they're the worst human being in the world to talk to.
Yeah.
On a more personal note, and by the way, I did check that this was okay to read out. On a more personal note, I really appreciated finding movie analysis from two queer femme folks, which is thankfully getting more normalized, but still faces some steep uphill battles. I finally got the courage to transition in 2022, and everything since then has been a whirlwind of revelations, equal parts exciting and terrifying. Still working retail, and 99% of people fuck up pronouns, but I've gotten mammed twice, and it's felt transcendent.
Aww.
Also going on 6 months of hormone therapy. From Michelle specifically, it's been profoundly encouraging to hear from another trans woman who's finding a way, however winding or difficult, to succeed in a creative industry. It's some comfort to realize you're not the only one who feels like they're about to go crazy sometimes with all the shit we have to slog through, and rating descending has made the slog easier.
Aww.
And speaking as a fellow podcast editor, I'm going to come back to this, Michelle's a saint for keeping this all together. 6 police academies, Godspeed. Anyway, not gonna ramble for too long. Best of luck for the bottom 80. It's gonna be a wild ride. Thanks, Svea.
Oh, bless. Thank you so much. That's so sweet.
Yeah, thank you so much, Svea. I already emailed back saying, you know, that was incredibly sweet and really did make my day. Oh, so much.
You are coming up to your hormone anniversary. Yeah, you literally just told me before we started
when recording. This episode releases, it'll be the next week. So, you know, 28th of March,
yeah,
is my 6 year on hormones.
6 years!
Which of course, that's 6 years on hormones.
That's insane. How quickly time doth go.
I know, 6 years. It still feels like it wasn't that long ago.
No, and I remember wild times for you when you began hormones, and I feel like the estrogen just made you chronically cry.
Yeah, oh
and
yeah.
There were mornings where I'd wake up and you'd be sitting on the end of my bed just crying.
I remember because there was one time I made you breakfast because I was making breakfast and just trying to be nice and stuff.
Yeah.
But then before I gave it to you, I burst into tears.
Yeah.
And you woke up and you're like, huh? Because you heard me crying. And I was like, I made you breakfast. And you're like, what?
Back in the days when we lived together.
Yeah.
But that was like, it became a regular.
It did.
It wasn't a one-off. It was like a couple of times a week I'd wake up and you were just like, there was a lot of emotion.
Yeah. And it feels impossibly big early in. And then you kind of just, I don't know. There's so much. Every time I meet someone else who's trans, but in particular someone who's early on hormones. And when I say early, I mean first 2 years. I'm 6 years in. That is still early. You know, I know people who are 12 years in. I've had the fortune of meeting people who are 30 years in. Six years is nothing comparatively.
Yeah.
But those first 2 years when everything is changing all at once, like, it's so stressful in ways that, like, you have to just process. But it's also like, hey, the good thing is that time will heal this. It will just get easier eventually.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I checked with Svea what the podcast that she edits is. It's a blog called Mythcreants, MythCreants, which does a lot of writing advice, mostly in the vein of sci-fi and fantasy, but not exclusively. Both Svea and Olivia has done a few articles for them. So shout out again to honored friend of the podcast, Olivia Bernard, and honored friend of the podcast now, Svea. Everyone should check out Mythcreants. Just to support more people who support this podcast.
That's beautiful. Good plug.
Hey, speaking of good plugs, you know what I wish I could plug up? Delta Farce.
That's right.
Yeah.
What a weird segue.
I know, but I also watched all the life leak out of your eyes as soon as it brought it up.
Oh, that was just because of the segue.
Come on. What the fuck?
No, I'm not too fussed with this one. I mean, it's not like it's making me particularly angry or disenchanted with life itself.
I guess we should get it out of the way. I did think this was going to be space. And so, of course, when I turned it on and it was instead Larry the Cable Guy doing US military comedy, could not have been more disappointed.
Yeah. And look, understood. Here's something for me. Like, overall impressions of this film, not great, but it actually had some performers that I like in it.
Yeah.
Like, what's his name? DJ Qualls?
Yeah, DJ Qualls, who I spent almost the entirety of the movie, the first half of the movie, getting confused with John Hawkes.
Who's John Hawkes?
Saul from
Of course. From Deadwood. They look so similar.
They do look similar, and we had him so recently that I was like, oh my God, there he is again.
No, but DJ Qualls is like, he was, notably for me, what I remember him from was he was that, like, DEA agent in Breaking Bad.
Yes.
Badges on that seat. He's like, I want drugs, man. Come on. I'm not an agent. And it's this really great slow scene.
Yeah.
And then as soon as he gives him some meth, he's just like, DEA, get on the fucking ground.
He does so good in that scene. That's
really good.
That specific balance of, like, we are pretty sure that he is, but maybe not. Like,
but, like, he No, like, I feel like you watch it and you're like, surely he's not, because he looks grubby and grimy. And, like, yeah. Once you see him in a suit, you're almost like, but he can't be a DEA agent. He looks strange and, like, you know, scraggly.
Yeah, yeah.
Scraggly little man.
But that's what I mean, because there's also parts of him going, like, no way, I'm not. Where I'm like, God, man. You're pretty insistent about this, yeah. Huh? You know, it's great. He's really good in that.
Yeah,
and
I liked
he was
him.
Kind of a runaway in this.
I think he was my standout in this. So I think there was a lot of moments with him that redeemed this for me. But I've got to say, Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah.
I have never really watched anything with him acting in it.
Yeah.
I've only, all I really know him from is just playing Mater in Cars, like voicing Mater.
Oh, forgot
That's
about
all
that.
I know that he's like really in.
Yeah. As well as, of course, Get Her Done.
Well, Get Her Done. But that's not, I just haven't come into contact with a lot of Larry the Cable Guy stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, what an underwhelming comedic presence.
Easily the worst part of the movie.
Truly.
No, maybe the least amount of screen presence I've ever seen someone have.
100%.
Bill Engvall, conversely, that guy's got riz.
He does.
He's got charm.
He's got riz, and I liked his character in this. I liked how he and his wife improved their relationship over the film. At the beginning, he's like, I hate my wife. I want to do a murder-suicide. And then at the end, he's like, I love that woman. You know, at least it wasn't the guy just hates his wife and that's the joke kind of storyline. It was him and his wife reconciling and ending up happy together.
I mean, there was a whole joke where even the gang agrees that he's got a real bitch wife towards the end. Yeah, but still, like, I was more pro being Engvall than Larry the Cable Guy.
100%. Larry was worst bit of the film.
Yeah, absolutely.
DJ Qualls, best bit of the film.
Get her done, more like get her out.
That's right. You know DJ Qualls is gay?
I did know that.
Queer man.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading about how he came out in like 2020 or 2022 or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, but he'd like referenced it before. I think the specific thing he'd said, he was tired of being worried about how it would impact his career.
Yeah.
Which is like heartbreaking.
It's the same sentiment that, oh God, what's his name? The Richard Armitage has expressed.
Yes.
Because he obviously only officially came out recently.
Mm.
But he was like, he was terrified of it impacting his career and his movie roles and how he would be cast and how it'd be perceived.
And it's that fucking annoying thing where we go like, oh, we've solved it, and like, hey, there's queer characters allowed and things, whatever, but often not played by queer actors. Queer actors get punished more so than queer characters do.
Yeah. I think I had a dream the other night that I was in a relationship with a woman and I had to hide it from my family.
Well, that was because you would be cheating.
Well, in this world, I was not married to a man.
Sure, sure.
I just had a girlfriend and I felt like I had to hide her from my family again. Like I was 16 all over again.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a bad feeling in the dream.
It's a bad feeling.
It's like that shame feeling, you know, of like everyone thinks this is dirty and wrong.
Yeah. Ugh. It's awful.
Yeah.
It's awful.
This is why I constantly talk about the idea of like, The concept of privilege is really like, how do you live your day every day? Like, what obstacles do you overcome every day?
Mm.
And right now, I am married to a man and we walk around and hold hands and I never feel that sense of shame or fear of what people will think. And that's what people mean by the privilege. It's like not having to give it a second thought. Whereas when I've dated women, there's a lot of fear of shame and judgment and it's something that can either be like very conscious in someone or subconscious. And so again, when people are like, do you identify as part of the queer community? I'm like, technically yes, but also I'm not experiencing it right now, like what part of the queer community often suffers.
Yeah, but you also don't have just the, you know, because there's we've talked before about how like there's the kind of queer person who I would argue, yeah, they're gay, but they're not queer because they don't, not just like don't live it, as you're saying, but also like have no intent, almost like reject queerness and reject the community and all of that. And I'm like, that for me is where it's like you're choosing to extricate yourself because you're unable to get over your internalized shame. That's very different than like in my day-to-day I don't encounter a huge amount of transphobia or anything because most of my friends are gay, most of the people I work with are gay or trans positive and stuff. That doesn't make me less trans.
I mean, you live in inner North Melbourne as well. We're in a very safe bubble, I would say. But when you've been walking around with partners that are girls, have you ever worried about what people will think if you hold their hand or kiss them?
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I don't live with that worry at all. I don't have to have that little thought in the back of my mind of what will that person think when they walk by and look at me or look at me do this. And like, as you say, like you're not getting any particular like transphobic hate on the street, but I'm sure there's this little part of your mind that thinks like, are they trying to, like, are they judging me? Are they looking at me?
I still worry about it when I go elsewhere.
That's what I mean. I know that's not anything that's directly happening to you, but it's an emotional burden.
Hey, all,
I don't have to carry.
All I'm trying to say is, whilst that's true, you're still queer, baby.
Thanks.
You're still queer, baby.
Thanks.
You're still doing it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Do we get into some key details?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this came out 2007. The director was C.B. Harding. This is the first thing that they directed. They mostly have directed stuff to do with... So an important bit of pretext is, have you ever heard of the Blue Collar Comedy Tour?
No.
So that is a comedy troupe featuring Jeff Foxworthy, who's the you might be a redneck. If you blah, 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 you might be a redneck. That's Jeff Foxworthy.
I don't think I know who that is.
He for a while would have been the only like Southern comedian who's probably more famous than Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah. Is he also like conservative or a libertarian?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all are.
Okay.
Bill Engvall, Ron White, and Larry the Cable Guy. They also are friends with Jeff Dunham, but he never toured with them, as far as I could tell. They have toured multiple times as well as appeared in movies together.
Mm.
I think it's the kind of thing where it probably started as Jeff Foxworthy with a bunch of opening acts, and then as Larry the Cable Guy's stock has risen, it has become these are the friends of Larry the Cable Guy who appear in his movies.
Mm.
I guess it's sort of like the Adam Sandler to... Schneider? No. King of Queens. Kevin James.
Kevin James,
It's the Adam Sandler to Kevin James handover.
Mm.
You know, Sandler is now doing other things. When they want to make like a Grown Ups 3, they're going to go to Kevin James first.
Yeah.
You know?
Something that makes me incredibly angry when I look at Kevin James. There's just something about him putting his hands in his pockets with his shoulders raised that makes me want to fucking throttle him. That
one King of Queens picture?
Yeah.
You really hate that one picture?
Really hate it.
I mean,
I think he's just like the ultimate symbol of mediocre men making it for reasons that are inexplicable.
Yeah.
Mediocre men that don't work very hard.
He's the definition of right place, right time.
Yes.
You know?
And right people, like right friends, right circles.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So those four have a troupe. C.B. Harding has directed a bunch of stuff to do with them, mostly like live shows.
I'm assuming C.B. Harding's a dude as well. Probably. Like 90% chance.
I mean, it just says C.B. Harding. There's no way. I don't know what their first name is.
Mm.
But yeah, probably almost definitely.
I just can't imagine this was directed by a woman.
Still doesn't say his name, but it confirms his pronouns. Okay.
Chris Bob.
Grizzly Bob.
Grizzly Bob.
Anyway, so this is starring, as we've sort of said a little, Larry the Cable Guy, Bill Engvall, DJ Qualls, Keith David, and Danny Trejo.
Yeah. Keith David. Love that man.
Always love Keith David.
Beautiful, beautiful voice.
Every time he's on screen, it's pure charisma.
Gravity. Oh, yeah. He commands the screen.
His smile. Every movie that gives him an excuse to smile, I'm so in it. I'm in it.
Wickedly handsome man.
Oh, my God.
And then also, Danny Trejo, I actually feel like he had a lot of fun. Like, he was actually giving it. Like, I think he was leaning into it a bit, which I enjoyed.
I mean, this is not a man with standards in cinema. So, like, he's definitely having fun with
it. Yeah, he's just letting loose.
Yeah.
And I appreciated it.
And, of course, he's the returning actor from Spy Kids 3.
Yes.
I don't think any of the others have been on the list.
Wow.
I tried to look up with, like, Keith David and stuff because I keep feeling like he was on the list. And it's just he's been in movies where, like, we've watched the first one of something and Keith David's been in it. Or movies that the podcast has made me think of watching. Sometimes I get confused because I'm like, oh, Keith David, he was in something. I'm like, it's just that I rewatched The Thing and I keep thinking the only movies I watch are for this podcast.
I always think of Keith David as being a similar kind of person to the guy that played Gus in Breaking Bad. Can't remember his name.
Oh, Giancarlo Esposito.
It's just because they've played very uptight, like, well, like manicured, clean men that are like very particular about things, and I always like hold them in the same.
I get you. They're also both charming. Like you get early career Giancarlo when he's doing more charming stuff. Mm. That's where you get the Keith David comparison.
Yeah,
you know?
Fully. But he's charming as Gus until he becomes fucking maniacally evil.
He is. It's just since then he only ever gets cast as Gus Spring without the charm. Yeah. And I'm like, come on, give him something else.
Yeah.
Also, anyone who wants to correct my pronunciation, that's how he says it. It's Giancarlo Esposito. He's Italian, not Spanish.
There you go. Get wrecked.
That's how he says it.
Anyone who hypothetically was going to come for us?
Get wrecked, haters.
Don't even think about it.
Correct my correct pronunciation of Giancarlo Esposito's name? Not in this house.
No way.
Nor in your house.
Sorry, Joe's?
Because it's Italian.
Well, he said it was Joe's.
Because he said it was Joe's.
Yeah. this guy I met on the street.
Yeah. This one guy, he was like, yeah, my name's Joes.
Joes, yeah.
And he was actually just talking about himself in plural. This is Joes.
What, he's got DID?
Yeah.
Dressing the numerous Joes.
No, he's just talking about, like, his jacket. This is Joes. The budget?
Yeah.
I couldn't find the budget for this.
Yeah.
Oh, very hard. But I did find a source that said his previous film was $4 million at Larry the Cable Guy Health Inspector. And the next one, I can't remember the name of, was $7.5 million. So I'm going to assume that this was somewhere in between.
So this was 2007, right?
2007.
And what year was that film with Larry the Cable Guy prior?
I think it would have been a few years prior.
Because it seems like Larry the Cable Guy really had a boom around this time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like 2006 was his era.
Yeah, that was peak Get Her Done.
Well, I mean, like, that's when Cars came out, right? 2006?
I guess so.
Did you like Cars?
No, I didn't like Cars. As an adult, I understand that Cars is fine.
Mm.
I made the mistake as a film I watched the change in generations happen as a teacher. For any listeners who don't know, I started teaching when I was 22. Mm. And last time I taught was like a year and a half ago, so I was 27. Over that period, I went from being pretty similar to the students, given that most of them were 18 to 25.
Mm.
However, at that point, if I said, I think Cars is kind of meh, they would have been like, yeah, I don't really care for it, because they're mostly thinking of it through the veil of their younger sibling, perhaps watching it.
Mm.
I said in Year of Our Lord 2022, I think Cars is meh. The whole class was about to fucking riot.
I like Cars.
I think it's fine. I think of the peak Pixar era, it's my least favorite.
It's not even like it came out when I was 11, you know, so it's not even like I was like necessarily too old for it. I felt a bit too old for it, but I also enjoyed the atmosphere. I liked the desert town.
You love a good like small town. I do. Doing a bunch of bullshit.
I liked Doc and like all of like the old photos that he shows Lightning McQueen. I liked the atmosphere of it, and I liked that Bonnie Hunt played the lead sexy female car.
Yeah,
that he wanted to.
Such a hot
bone.
Car.
Yes. Fuck.
Larry the Cable Guy Health Inspector came out in 2006.
Are we done talking about Cars?
Witless Protection came out in 2008.
All day. What's your favorite Mater line?
I don't remember a single line of Mater. I don't care for Mater. I don't like Cars. I don't like Michelle's Larry like, the Cable Guy.
Michelle's like instantly tensed up her whole body.
Since that fucking movie came out, people keep asking me what I think about Cars. It's shocking how frequently people ask me what I think about Cars and get upset when I'm not giving effusive praise.
Have you tried giving it another chance?
I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about Cars.
Why?
I don't care for it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
What happened? Did something really terrible in your life happen? Did you like watch your mother get shot in the back of the head while Cars was on?
There's so many other movies out there, and we have to keep going through Cars over and over again.
When I was trying to talk about buying a house, you kept bringing up We Bought a Zoo.
Yeah.
You know?
What a hilarious bad movie.
What a hilarious great movie.
You bought a house.
Cars.
It's not. It isn't, though. It's mediocrity manifest.
It is incredibly hypocritical of you to come for me talking about Cars when you couldn't stop talking about We Bought a Zoo.
That's not the same at all. We Bought a Zoo. We like bad movies. That's what we do, all right? We Bought a Zoo is exactly the kind of bullshit that you and I like.
To you, because we're Cars slut goblins. Cars is a bad movie.
No, it's nothing.
It's not nothing.
It is nothing. It's watching paint dry. It enters my head and exits it at the same speed, creating
Everything
a vacuum in my
head,
brain where
okay,
thought
Michelle,
should be.
Your head is a vacuum. It just sucks.
I'm not one. I don't want to keep talking about Cars. I haven't even gotten to the overview.
All right, go for it.
What I was going to say, by the way, with the box office, the budget is between 4 to 7 million. Mm-hmm. The box office was 8.7 million, but I did find DVD sales, $24.6 million.
What the fuck?
I think every streaming service that decides to not do physical media is doing everyone involved a disservice. This movie made almost $25 million in DVD sales.
What the fuck?
Because people love Larry the Cable Guy and they wanted to own Delta Farce on DVD.
They're of the generation that would want to own it on DVD.
Hey, I'm of the generation who wants to own it on DVD.
That's
right?
Just the tism, Michelle.
You can't keep just using that for everything, okay?
But it does cover a lot, doesn't it?
It does.
There's a lot about you that tends to be explained by
that. I didn't say that you were wrong. I said that you shouldn't do that.
One could also theorize that your absolute anger towards Cars
that's not
could
the
be the tism.
That's not the same. You can't do that. This is ableism.
Oh, yeah.
I've turned it around.
I love being able. Cut that out.
I don't know. I'm surprised your ADHD brain can remember cars. Here's the overview.
Okay.
This is also with love. When three...
Let's bring it down. Hey, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Where's my apology?
When three U.S. Army Reserve members...
Where's my apology?
When three...
Where is it? You're not getting through this overview without an apology.
When three...
Give it to me.
Let me just turn Abby's mic down. Keep screaming.
Give it to me. Stop it.
No, you're gone, Abby. No. You're gone.
Give it to me.
All right,
give me
back.
My apology. Give it to me. Just say, I'm sorry, Abby.
I'm sorry, Abby.
I feel like you're about to pull a lever and I'm about to fall through the floor.
I'm sorry for what I'm about to do, Abby. Chunk.
Well, I guess technically you apologize, so I have to move on.
When three U.S. Army Reserve members, Larry, Bill,
and I just hate fighting.
Oh, my God.
I just hate fighting with you. It's hard.
For someone who hates fighting, you like starting them.
I hate fighting, but I love stirring the pot.
I didn't think that Delta Fast would be the end of our friendship for this reason.
Yeah, well, it all started with cars.
I did expect it to be cars related.
Do you remember one time I made like an event on Facebook for like my birthday or Lauren's birthday, I think, and then the event description was just the entire script of Cars 2.
I do remember that.
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
You know, when I thought cars would come between our friendship, I thought it was because I was going to fucking run you over. And if you love cars so much, I'll do it.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
And then I get a DVD of Cars and I just mush it on you. And I'm like, here you go. It's a prison for peace. When three U.S. Army Reserve members, I have to get through the overview.
I just feel bad, you know?
Larry,
when we fight,
Bill, and Everett.
I feel like it ruins my mood for the rest of the day. Because I'm just like, I feel bad. You feel bad. And it takes it out of me. It's like emotionally draining to fight. You know what I mean?
You know, I've been talking recently with some people about how on the podcast, some of the bits where we make each other upset, we later say to each other, that was my favorite bit.
Yeah.
Because we do think it's funny.
It's not your favorite bit right now?
No, not right now.
Well, it will be in an hour. You know, the thing that I feel like when we are fighting as well, what gets to me as well is that we become our worst selves.
Yeah.
And I really think it just comes down to communication. And like, you need to be more clear that you don't want to talk about cars. Like, yelling it was not enough.
I don't want to talk about cars.
Yeah, see?
Is that clearer?
Well, now I'm feeling defensive again, but that's me, you know?
It is you.
I've got to lower that defense.
No, you're right, Abby. It is your fault.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
No, you wouldn't.
I'm just trying to... I'm literally just trying to get through this fight so we can feel okay. And you're making it an issue again. Are you serious?
There's the edit in point.
Are you fucking serious?
It's weird. It's been 3 minutes of recording, so Speya sent an email in.
Look, let's just put it to bed.
I'm happy to do that.
Are you feeling good?
I'm feeling great.
Okay, because I'm feeling a bit...
I'm feeling alive.
On edge.
Here's the thing. Our fights make me feel stronger.
Whoa.
And more powerful.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You're sapping me of my energy.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Interesting.
You might think you're blocking me. You're only improving me, making me sharper, better.
Stronger.
Stronger.
I respect it. All right.
Larry,
continue.
Bill, and Everett
Please,
are called
Michelle,
into unexpected...
Continue.
Abby?
I would love it.
I swear to God.
Well, are we doing the overview?
We're... almost 25 minutes in, maybe 30, depending on how much I cut.
Sorry.
I have to get through the overview.
All right.
Delta Fast can't be an hour long.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go. Let's go.
When three U.S. Army Reserve members, Larry, Bill, and Everett, are called into unexpected active duty, they are quickly trained and whisked away to fight in Iraq. However, during the flight, they and their sergeant get accidentally dumped out of the plane and land in northern Mexico. Thinking their sergeant is dead and mistaking their location for Iraq, the trio drive off and try to find a way to complete their mission, which is very nebulous.
To
get terrorists.
In a car with a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all they seem to understand of it. They semi-accidentally liberate a nearby town from a gang and bask in the adulation of the locals. While trying to help repair the town, they slowly realize they are in fact in Mexico, but decide to ride it out. However, the gang comes back to town as the sergeant arrives. They manage to scare off the gang with a bazooka by accident, but they kidnap the sergeant in the process. Or the gang, sorry. The gang does. The three decide to try and save the sergeant by breaking into the gang's compound. They manage to escape, but draw the gang to the village. A shootout begins, but they are saved when a large number of American military helicopters arrive and get the gang to stand down.
Nice.
Then everyone has their own individual happy ending.
Yeah. I will say, there were bits of this film that made me laugh. There was a couple of things. Yeah. I think DJ Qualls was great. There was also that bit where Maria, who is this like beautiful woman from the local Mexican village, La Miranda, and she tells Larry, the cable guy, who she's meant to be romantically interested in for whatever reason, because he's like a white liberator, quote unquote, that she's like, we're being, you know, the leader of the gang that's hurting us. His name is Carlos Santana. And then it just like plays like a little guitar riff where it's like, and
the guitar riff, and specifically his tone. I wrote that down as well. It's like, that's a funny bit.
That was funny.
That's a good bit.
Made me laugh.
I also thought it was funny, but I don't know if it was the way it was intended, the way everyone keeps calling Santana a singer. They're like the singer. And I'm like, he's way more.
He's so much more than a singer.
He's way more known for his guitar playing. He makes a lot of instrumentals.
Yeah.
Calling him a singer is very funny to me.
Yeah. I would say I'm not the biggest Santana fan. But it's really just, honestly, because of how much I hated that song, Smooth. I hated it.
My mum loves Rob Thomas, loves Santana, and loves that song, Smooth.
I love Rob Thomas. I hate that song. There's something about that riff that just doesn't rub me the right way. Yeah. In fact, it rubs me the wrong way. Maybe it was because it was like used in 25 different films that came out in 2004 or whatever.
It's a weirdly popular song.
It was just so popular, you couldn't escape it. You didn't want it anymore. It's making me agitated. You know how you feel about cars?
That's how you feel about Smooth by Carlos Santana, feet Rob Thomas?
Yeah, feet Rob Thomas.
Feet Rob Thomas.
Love Rob Thomas, though.
And you love his feet.
Yeah.
In this...
Sure do. I didn't have to talk about
it. He was in that one episode of It's Always Sunny, right? I don't remember seeing his feet, but I do remember he was actually pretty funny in it.
I reckon if you look at the music video of
From Meet the Robinsons? No.
Where he's like on the run from his solo album, first song on his solo
album. Oh, the Diamonds, Her Diamonds?
This is how hearts break. Oh, this is different. How hearts break.
And he's like, song that I was thinking of.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that's okay.
And he's on the run and then like he's like got all these diamonds and he's running up walls. I bet we could look at his feet. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe it is that song.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Let's have a look.
I remember that he wrote that song, Her Diamonds, or something, which is about his wife's autoimmune disease.
Oh.
And my sister, they're Greatest Hits / EP, Exile on Main Street, which was a Greatest Hits album, but also a 5-song EP attached to it.
Yeah.
My sister loved that. She was obsessed with Rob Thomas. She would play it in the car over and over again.
Yeah.
To the point where really every time we got in the car, we knew that that's what we were listening to.
I really loved Lonely. Like, I don't want to be lonely no more.
That's a good one.
I don't want to have to fame in this.
When I was a little kid, before I had my mop haircut, I had a sort of surfy cut that was almost identical to the haircut that Rob Thomas had early in his career, in particular
in Matchbox 20.
In Matchbox 20, and in particular in the music video for the song Crazy.
Nice. Yeah. What about in the song Unwell? I'm not crazy, I'm just a little unwell. I think
that's the song I was thinking of.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
So you don't really know Matchbox 20 that well.
Well, kinda I like just don't know fan. The names of the songs
fake fan.
As well.
Name 4 more songs.
What's the one that's in Barbie?
I don't know. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Push.
Push. Yeah, yeah.
I want to push
the,
you
The song
around.
That is perfect thematically. I like, because it's a song written about domestic abuse. And people were like, wait, are you doing the abuse? And he's like, no, I'm receiving it. And they're like, wait, so are you talking about it from their perspective? And he's like, no, it's about like, if I was in that position, I just want to be able to like get back at you and stuff. And it's like, that's exactly what Ken is doing.
Yeah.
It's fucking perfect.
Yeah.
As well as being annoying guitar guy song. I can't think of a possibly better pick.
And that scene in Barbie is so good.
It's really great.
It is a perfect song choice.
This is a really minor note. There's a point where they're about to go to training and stuff, and Keith David arrives, and then Everett arrives, and then he's like, oh, hey, Sarge, want a Slim Jim? And then he pulls out the longest stick of meat I've ever seen in my life. Can you or any American listeners confirm, is a Slim Jim really that long?
Yeah, please tell us, because we only have like little twiggy sticks here.
We got the little twiggy sticks, and then there's like the little pepperoni sticks.
Yeah, well, some twiggy sticks aren't cut, and they can be longer as well.
But they're not that long.
Well, honestly, they're probably like, I would say, 6 inches long.
Yeah, but that was, you know... That, and then that thing in the movie was like fucking bigger than his head.
I said inches for our American audience, by the way.
Yeah.
That is roughly
what. Well, because you were picturing a big old penis.
That's right.
Sometimes I just wish I didn't speak.
Yeah.
Is He did say get her done in this movie. There was the point, did you notice, so when they're in Mexico, they're roaming around, which, oh my God, I was spending the whole movie going like, this is an international incident, right? Like, this is a bunch of guys in the army roaming around Mexico in an assault vehicle with guns. Mm. This is a horrid thing that's happening.
Yeah.
But they run into the Mexican guy, his son, and the donkey. And that the Mexican guy is the guy who's in everything. He's in Arrested Development. He's in The Shield.
Is he in an episode of The Shield?
He's in one episode of The Shield.
Oh, my God.
I specifically looked it up.
Don't start me on The Shield, Michelle. That's a rabbit hole.
The Shield.
We've fallen down it before.
Beodello.
Mm-hmm.
In one episode.
Which episode? One for all you listeners there at home.
Season 3, episode 7, Safe.
Safe. Oh, dude. The money train. You'll have to watch it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right. He's always the Mexican guy. Like, just like he's that actor on retainer for a lot of American productions. So,
especially in this era, in the 2000s. Yeah. I feel it so much, by the way. One of my big shocks about this movie, it is, but it is less racist than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Like, I really thought when I realized what it was, that it was going to be significantly more racist. Could have been more racist.
The thing is, like, I don't have an issue with this film too much because all three of the characters, the joke is that they're stupid. Like, they're just idiots together and, like, they're blundering around with the wrong idea about everything. Yeah. So, therefore, like, anything that's potentially offensive, it's more making a joke of them rather than other people. It's not them laughing at stuff being like, that's so stupid. It's everyone laughing at them.
Which is also the thing that I think is wild to me about why these comedians and this troupe of comedians are so popular. Because if I was Southern, I would fucking hate this because I would feel like I'm being stereotyped at, like, no one seems to more successfully stereotype rednecks as idiot hicks who are racist than these guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why are they so fucking popular?
But I think the thing is, like, the thing about their stereotype, at least, is that it's probably just based in like, authenticity. It is what a lot of men in the deep south of America feel and relate to. And so, like, people probably loved Larry the Cable Guy because he was just genuinely, they related to him. You know?
Yeah, but
not him in this film.
Yeah,
but him in general.
Like, I was like, what? Like,
but this is always the character he plays, which is like a dumbass. But men love that. I think they like that it's basically self-deprecating.
Hey, not to get ahead of myself, basically every single positive review went, don't think, stop thinking.
That's a lot of reviews we see here, though.
I know, but there's something, I guess, about Larry the Cable Guy that really brings out the please don't use your brain brigade.
Yeah.
The pro stop thinking people. Yeah. That's the one thing I'm not pro.
100%.
I'm pro thinking. I'm anti stuff.
Well, I'm for anti, as we've said.
Yeah, yeah. So you're pro anti thinking.
I'm pro anti, but I'm anti thinking.
Right. So you're
they're two separate concepts.
But aren't you also anti thinking then?
No. I'm pro anti. Then on top of that, I am anti thinking.
Right.
And then on top of that, I'm pro anti thinking. Does that make sense?
I think you made it way more complicated than you needed to.
I think we should move on.
Okay. I don't know what it is about this episode. We're just yelling at each other.
Friction in the air.
Friction in the air.
Yeah, we've got stuff to get out. I think the cars thing really blew up, and I'm sorry. I don't think it was. It wasn't my best moment.
Thank you.
And I would like another apology from you as well. Yeah.
I'm really glad that you want that. It's really touching. So just
anytime now.
It's really touching that that's what you want from me.
Yeah, just for you to say I am crazy and should give cars another shot.
I think this is all going to move on a lot smoother if we both just let go of certain things. Yeah,
and I'm willing to let go as soon as you apologize. Yeah.
See, that's what I'm saying. I think the letting go might need to happen now.
No, because for me, arguing is about feeling like I've won when someone apologizes.
Right, let me do it. me. La 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 la. New York is a city of jazz. All right, I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay, Michelle.
I'm sorry.
And she's twiddling her little tongue, poking her little finger.
I'm doing both at the same time. It's actually really difficult. It's quite difficult to do both at once.
Okay, this film. All right, we need to.
Did you have anything to think about with this film?
I stopped thinking in the a la Larry the Cable Guy, you know? Yeah. It wasn't as bad as it should have been. I liked some of the lines and the performances. Yeah. And I liked DJ Qualls and I liked Danny Trejo. So I was like, good stuff. Keith David.
There was the bit towards the end where, like, I feel like there were some good bits. They're like, all right, you know, they're about to storm the compound and they're like, I got an idea. And immediately cut. And then Bill Engvold walks in dressed like a dopey tourist. He's like, hey, do you know the way to get to the thing? And I'm like, he does that really well. He sells the joke. And the speed of it is really funny.
Yeah.
That's a good joke.
There's some good cutting, good pacing.
Engvold was funny.
Yeah.
He could have been more funny if he was in it, like, did more with it. Every time he got, like, a solo bit, they would focus on the least funny parts of his character.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, he had charm. He had screen presence. Yeah. Something Larry the Cable Guy was sorely and repeatedly lacking.
100%. It's annoying that he was the lead, considering he was the weakest out of everybody.
Yeah.
And again, like, Keith David really carried it. I liked some of the performances. I liked some of the jokes. Don't ask me what really happened in that film. I know you did the overview, but...
I do think there's the bit where Keith David's been captured.
Mm.
There was a lot of weird homophobic jokes around Keith David that were confusing.
And there were homophobic jokes because Danny Trejo's character, Carlos Santana, had a gay nephew or something.
Because there was also the earlier bit where he goes for a ride with two guys, and then we later see him bust out of a cabin yelling at them, going like, I'm going to get you, you deviants, and then he rides off, but he's wearing like a red lace negligee and frilly underwear. But I'm like, he didn't chase that. Did they force him to put that on? I feel like the scene is played as if he put it on and then got angry at them.
Right.
Which is confusing.
Interesting.
And either play of it is a little homophobic.
Yeah. I will say, Monty Python did this thing, which I feel like was okay, considering the taste of it. Like, they had the skit where they would, like, Michael Palin and Eric Idle would come on in, like, full judge garb. They'd be, like, wearing the long red coats.
Mm.
And they'd have the long, like, I think they call them long bottom wigs made out of horsehair. I know. And they're coming there talking about how awful that case was and how, like, you know, what they've been up to that day in their trials. And as they're disrobing, they're wearing just, like, lacy lingerie underneath. And I feel like it's not them making fun. They're just normal dudes. It's just like kind of being like, they're not making fun of gay men. It's not really the vibe. It's more like, isn't it funny these guys that are so professional and then they're just wearing lingerie underneath? Like, and I'm like, it's kind of how you get away with it, you know? Yeah. The joke is that they're judges.
Yeah.
Not that they're gay.
Because I don't think that's what's happening here.
No.
Whereas later when there's the nephew doing drag and then it's like, the punishment, the way they're torturing him, is making him sing a duet of, which wasn't that funny, but specifically the bit where they start singing, what was the song? Babe, I Got You, Babe?
Danny Trejo sings.
No, not Danny Trejo.
Yeah, I know. But that's the only one I can remember. Like, I'm pretty sure survive.
It's I Got You, Babe.
Nice.
And there's a bit where it's coming up to Keith David's part, and then the guy next to him with a gun cocks it and goes, like, it's a duet. That was funny.
Yeah.
That was a funny bit.
There are a few good lines.
Yeah. Conversely, also, DJ Qualls is really selling it. There's a bit, there's this runner. Yeah. Is that there's a cannon that he's trying to fix up. I don't think he ever does.
I thought this scene was so interesting to me as well.
Which one?
The cannon when he's trying to fix it.
Yeah, okay.
Because he's, you know, he's looking down the barrel of this cannon. It's not working. Yeah. And he puts his full arm in it to fix it. And then a gunshot goes off behind you. And for me, I was like, oh my God. You know, they did that well. They make you think that the thing's going off while he's got his arm in it.
Confuse me. The scene begins and ends with his arm stuck in it.
Yeah.
It's a smooth tube.
Mm-hmm.
What is his arm stuck on?
You've never been stuck in a smooth tube?
No. It's a smooth tube. I can retract easily.
Oh, tell that to the guy that died in the Nutty Putty Cave. Huh?
What?
Tell that to the guy who died in the Nutty Putty Cave.
Have a stroke? What the fuck?
There was a guy that went, you know, spelunking through the Nutty Putty Cave system in America. He was going down this, like, long, straight-looking tunnel, but then his body just got wedged.
Oh. And that's, he died. But that's a narrowing tube.
Yeah.
Not just a smooth
tube.
Well,
how do you know that a cannon doesn't necessarily narrow or taper?
Because the ball needs to get out of it.
What if there's more space at the end for it to fly out?
DJ Qualls is the slimmest man I've ever seen in my life. His arm can get in it because it is a thin, gangly piece of bone.
You try putting your arm in a cannon, all right?
A much wider...
And then you talk to DJ Qualls, okay?
I don't blame DJ Qualls. I blame Everett.
You haven't called the man that got stuck in the Nutty Putty Cave? Huh?
I think, you know what? I think DJ Qualls could get out of the Nutty Putty Cave.
Yeah, he would be fine.
Yeah, he would be
I wouldn't.
Fine.
Not with this ass, am I right?
Not with them big netties.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You got big natties. I got smaller natties, but they're still natties nonetheless. They just needed to be kickstarted.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You're catching up.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had years to have these natties.
Some people get inbuilt generational wealth.
I get inbuilt generational tits. I'm kickstarted. You had to GoFundMe to get these.
GoFundMe, yeah. Hey, do you want to hear some trivia?
Yeah, man. IMDb trivia. Yeah, brah.
So shortly before the barracks scene near the beginning, Keith David fell off a 7-foot railing outside the building while the actors were between shots.
What the fuck?
Breaking 2 ribs and cracking 2 vertebrae.
Holy shit.
He went on to film the scene in great pain and then went to hospital afterward.
What a professional.
I know.
What a man.
And I'm sure they were like, Keith, are you okay?
You should just go, dude. Like,
fully just go. Yeah,
if there was someone set being like, actually, that would be really handy if he stayed. It's like, fuck you. Let him go to the hospital.
I think he turned and he was like, you think I want to come back to Delta Force?
Yeah. I'm going to use this excuse to cut and run.
I'm finishing my day and then I'm taking a break.
Yeah.
Jeff Foxworthy was originally set to star in the movie, but had to drop out. This is not written well, but had to drop out due his schedule conflict.
It was just written by Larry.
Jeff Foxworthy was originally set to star in the movie, but had to drop out due his schedule conflicts with Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader 2007.
Was he like the host in it or something?
He was the fifth grader.
Yeah, pretty much. I think I already know the answer to that question. He's not smarter than a fifth grader.
My theory is that he was going to play DJ Qualls' character. Because
DJ Qualls made no sense as
The other two are in a troupe.
They're in a troupe, and also like the characters are their real names, and then DJ Qualls is like Emmett or Ernest or whatever.
Everett. You're close.
I just watched this, man.
It's
gone.
It's gone.
My mind is good at picking up on things that aren't important.
Yeah, like cars.
Yeah. It's funny that I've stored so many pivotal memories from cars for the last 18 years.
We've talked more about cars than we have about Delta Force.
It's the only good thing Larry the Cable Guy's ever contributed.
I don't disagree with you. In the interrogation scene with Sergeant Kilgore, Keith David, he talks about... this I read because it was really funny. He talks about his service in the Vietnam War. This is a subtle nod to his role in the Vietnam War movie, Platoon. Although the two roles are different, the connection was still made.
A subtle nod? Because isn't the Delta Force Fast poster also like... Isn't it... No, it's Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, it's Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really thought it was going to be space, but I forgot Delta Force is like one of the spec ops things. Like the Rangers or the Green Berets. This is what I was reading about this morning to try and understand this movie. Because I was like, what the fuck are they talking about? Delta sounds like space.
I know.
Sounds like space.
It's okay, Michelle. Hey, it's all right.
It sounds like space.
I know. Honey, I know. Honey.
I just wanted it to be in space. Imagine if they were in space.
I know. Hey, I know. Thanks. Space. I know.
You've never hurt me more than you just saying space like that.
I've never felt more patronizing.
Space.
Look, frankly, I'm not a space girl. I don't get it.
I know you're not. It's for me. You're not a fucking Iraq war girl, though.
I'm not. Look, I can appreciate that space is cool, but what
if they were in a small American town?
Gravity-less dark void sounds terrible. I don't want that. I love being on Earth.
That's part of what's interesting about
it. It's where I belong.
You know?
Give me another one.
What if they were in the English countryside and it was all twee and shit? There we go. How's that? How's that?
What if they were stuck headlong in the Nutty Putty cave system?
Did you fucking love that so much?
I fucking love that one.
Oh my god, what if they were a small highway town? This is technically a goof, but it wasn't weirdly written. Okay. When Larry, Bill, and Everett were heading for Fallujah, Iraq, they suddenly found themselves in northern Mexico. You cannot reach Iraq in a C-130 by way of Mexico. Which is a good point. There is no way where they were flying from, which I'm pretty sure would have been the southeast of the United States.
Yeah. Or southwest of the United States?
When they started? No, it would have been southeast.
Where do they live in the southeast in the beginning?
Abby, I don't even know if it's specified.
I thought they were in Missouri, Texas or something.
Texas? I don't think they're in Texas.
Okay.
I think they're in, like, Georgia.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they're in Georgia.
Okay.
Because there's a different reference to Georgia at one point.
We'll have to dig through the Delta Force lore to find the answer to this question. Have you got another 20 minutes?
Fly east to Iraq. How are they in northern Mexico?
Unless they decided to go west for whatever the fuck reason.
Even if they were in Texas, they would fly. Even if they flow east, there's a very narrow band of northern Mexico.
The only way it could make sense is if they set off from like LA or Texas, and for some reason they went south and then headed out, you know?
Yeah, which That's is the not only the flight way. Path.
No.
Do you want to hear some reviews?
Yes, I do.
Reviews! This has 5% Rotten Tomatoes. Oof. And 3.6 on IMDb. The Rotten Tomatoes consensus, this is just my favorite of the reviews, mm-hmm. too afraid to be a real satire of the Iraq War, Delta Farce instead devolves into reprehensible, unfunny mix of slapstick, gay panic, and flatulence jokes.
Yeah, that pretty much nailed it.
Yeah.
Especially the gay panic.
Yeah. Here's an IMDb review. It was really hard sifting through it because a lot of them were just people going like, stop thinking. It's funny. I think it's really funny. Larry the Cable Guy, what a funny guy. Mm. And I'm like, there's nothing really entertaining in that other than that you think that that guy's funny.
Yeah.
So this one's titled Don't Overthink This by Nabor7.
Mm-hmm.
After reading the various comments for this, it seems that most viewers have allowed others to do their thinking for them. This movie is not To Kill a Mockingbird.
This is so libertarian, by the way, as well.
This movie is not To Kill a Mockingbird or The Sound of Music. It is a movie made by redneck comedians dedicated to our real fighting men and women.
Oh, God.
Anyone who has ever been in combat knows that humor is where you find it.
What?
And this movie has a lot of it. If you keep your mind open... This database is an amazing tool.
We agree. This database is an amazing tool, isn't it, Bus Baby?
Yes, yes.
Yes.
This, if you look at other movies commented on by users who didn't like this movie, the majority haven't liked other inane titles with the same bent of humor. I don't pay theater prices to see a movie. They are a ripoff, especially when most moviegoers are rude, inconsiderate slobs.
Yeah.
I guess my point is that if a person doesn't like this type of movie, why pay the money to hate something you have predetermined to hate? The trailer was enough to know how the movie would be. If you like to be entertained and don't want or have to think, this is an excellent movie. 7 out of 10.
I do love temporarily not thinking for a bit, but this film didn't assist in that.
It's just
That's why I used to do drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's quicker avenues than fucking Jeff Foxworthy.
Mm.
Here's another one. Harmless Amusing Diversion by Mushbuster. This film rated only 3% at RottenTomatoes.com. That means it pleased only 3% of all the reviewers. Critics would be a percentage, pretentious job description for most of these folks who wrote it up.
Jeez.
If I know. I'm going to call them reviewers. Critic would be too pretentious. If you read the reviews are proposition far more tedious than the film, they seem to hate, you'll see why there's nearly universal disdain for the flick.
Why aren't you getting this, Michelle? Crystal clear to me.
I'm so sorry. I stopped thinking in the middle of it.
Well, that's good.
And it's our favorite list, by the way. 1. A premise based on military reservists going to fight in Iraq. See Bush derangement syndrome. 2. Jokes predicated on homosexual panic, the despised homophobia. That by the homophobia is in quotes. And 3, in quotes, idiot racist humor. E.g., I hear them carpet flyers don't wipe their butts. Well, the establishment types cannot stand by and allow us to laugh at those sorts of things. Now, can they? Especially not if they happen to be funny. So they've sharpened their pens and let fly against what is basically a sweet, harmless, and amusing diversion. They said the same things with a bit less vitriol. After all, the premise didn't arise from the hated Iraq campaign, did it? About Larry the Cable Guy's last movie. So I rented the DVD and laughed my ass off. I mean, can you really not laugh at Larry's fart and plumber's crack jokes?
Oh,
or big
God.
Old burly rednecks worrying about their masculinity? Of course not. Fart jokes are funny! Hey, you may not laugh as hard as you would at the hoity-toity pretentiousness of the mainstream media's narcissistic reviewers, but you'll laugh nonetheless. 8 out of 10.
The truth is, the racist lines like them carpet flyers don't wipe their butts, like, the joke is that that is a horrible thing to say, and the joke is on people that feel that way, the kind of people that would say that thing. It's not actually the characters are like, all the writers are like, this is a funny joke and this will get laughs. The joke is that the joke is bad.
Yeah. The thing that offends me isn't the premise of the jokes being racist or homophobic. It's the punchlines.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
But then there's people like this where they go online and they're like, I get it. It's a funny joke. You're all taking too much offense. And it's like, I think you're the one that didn't understand the joke.
Yeah.
Like, if you think that's what they actually feel, I don't think you get it.
I'm also like, are you just getting off on the idea that you're allowed to be a little offended the way they're like, I'm allowed to, I'm allowed to.
Despised homophobia.
Oh my God. As it were.
It sucks that people can't be homophobic anymore, man.
I know.
It is so fucked up. I know,
it's so hard. Sometimes I look in the mirror and I'm like, ooh.
I heard about did you ever hear about the turkey slap incident on Big Brother?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard about it. Claude mentioned he was talking about the turkey slap thing in Big Brother, and I was like, what the fuck was that? And we looked it up, and it's like he had thought it was just that it was like consensual and normal, but it was fully sexual harassment, and the guys got kicked out. And I read this interview by the guys later on being like, the way we were treated was so appalling, like everyone was branding us rapists. And I'm like, maybe you shouldn't force your dick on someone's face, and then people won't call you a fucking racist, a rapist. Or a racist. Look, he's from Bondi. He'd probably be a racist as well, probably. Let's be honest. It's just fucked. It's like it's bizarre when it doesn't matter. I'm getting riled up.
Here's the last IMDb review titled Very Funny by ED76151.
Mm-hmm.
Or alternatively ED76151.
Thank you for the alternate suggestion.
I don't know how it's meant to be read, you know.
Mm.
Is it Raymond Jowdy? Is it Giancarlo Esposito? How's it meant to be pronounced?
Well, you're just stressing the wrong numbers.
Yeah,
that's the thing. You've just got to put your stress on the 7, it's actually not the 6.
Ed 76,151.
All right, Christopher Walken.
Ed 76,151.
Okay, go.
We'll find us. If you served in the military, then your only response to this film is to laugh your ass off. If you didn't serve, then you might not get some of the humor, but hopefully you were able to laugh just the same. 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10.
What do you reckon is the chance that guy served in the military?
Don't know.
I think 2%.
Nice. All right, I'll go with that too.
What's your review?
I've stopped having my own thoughts, by the way. I'm just trying to follow protocol.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you have to have a thought.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it wasn't Cars. To start with.
Yeah, it's no Cars.
No Cars. Listen. I don't understand why this film is lower than films like Little Man. It's not like I want to defend this film. This film's stupid and dumb.
This is the second time this week you've referenced Little Man to me. I forgot we did it.
Little Man was a real low for me. And you know what else was a real low for me? I was thinking about this. Yoga Hoses was probably the real low of this podcast.
Yeah.
We were both in tears before we recorded it.
We were, which was not related to Yoga Hoses, but
well, for me,
Yoga
it was
Hoses
a bit.
Didn't help.
I think I was like, I'm in such a dark place, and the last thing I want to do is talk about yoga.
Didn't we start by like we had to look up a bunch of would you rather's, and we did that for like 30 minutes
to like calm ourselves down?
Yeah.
What a time. But this, it's not like it's. I don't feel like things are getting worse.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying myself more. That's the confusion. This film. Would I ever watch it again? No. I'd never watch it again.
No.
So for that, I think I have to give it a 3 out of 10.
That's
fair. It's a 3.
I think I'm with you. This movie gets a 3. It's nothing, but it was a movie.
And there were one or two jokes that were pretty good.
There were one or two jokes that were okay.
Yeah.
That were okay. Let's not talk it up too much, you know?
All right.
Well, you know, if you like hearing us fight, you know where else you can hear us fight? Social media. You can find us on X at Rate Descend Pod, on TikTok at Rate Descending, or you can even email us, like Svea, at ratedescending@gmail.com. We love those goddamn emails.
Or you can find us on YouTube now. We have our own YouTube account under Rating Descending as well. Go check it out.
Hell yeah. Also, you can find me on social media at Twitter and Instagram at Michelle.St.Clair. You can find me on Letterboxd at MSt.Clair. And also go check out Shippers, a series I worked on, at your YouTube at Shippers the Series, where you can also find No Ordinary Love, which is at No Ordinary Love Series.
Nice. And please, pretty please, don't forget to leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It really makes a difference.
Oh, Abby, that was dealt. We're both melting.
It's a hot day.
It's a, yeah.
It's March it and is, it's like 30 degrees.
It is Smooth by Santana because, man, it's a hot one.
Shut up. Shut up. It's cars because it's Lightning McQueen.
You just, Abby, I don't think you get the joke format. Yeah, I don't think you get it. I've spent a long time punching up this joke format. And I just don't think
just
you
stay
get
out of it.
Just stay out of it. All right. This is my get her done.
All right.
All right.
All right. I get it.
Well, we must be Larry the Cable Guy because we sure got her done. What are we watching next week?
Michelle, next week we are watching Swept Away.
Yes.
You seem excited.
This is the Guy Ritchie directed Madonna starring movie.
Oh, shit.
That almost killed his career.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. You know what we got to do? And we've said over the last year that we would do a lot of bonus episodes, none of which we've done yet.
Well, we're busy girls.
But you know one we got to do that we should do as part of this? Yeah, we even can record a double next week. Is we should do Swept Away, and then we should also do Revolver, a movie he did around the same time.
I've seen Revolver.
Yeah.
It's not great. Okay.
For the podcast. All right. A little Guy Ritchie double.
Yeah, all right. You know what also wasn't great? Rock and Roller. That was a really average film.
I liked Rock and Roller.
Yeah? It wasn't for me.
I think it's not as good as Snatch or Lock, Stock, but I think I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was too flashy with no substance.
Well, yeah, it's Guy Ritchie.
Yeah. But sometimes he has substance.